This is The Mary Davis Show, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with interviews, news, special features, and the community calendar. Now, here is your host, Mary Davis.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis. The show, of course, is The Mary Davis Show. I'm just wondering what all of you may have thought about the debate we had, the second Republican debate, which was just this past Wednesday. And certainly we're going to find out and talk about it a little bit with one of my guests who's here with me, Joan Simmons. Joan Simmons is usually an activist on some other issues, but she's also quite interested in what's going on politically and all prepared with what's happened with the Republican debate. So we're just going to talk about a little bit, a little run through on that just to see what some of you may think and what we think, too. I found some things to be quite interesting that in that debate. I thought the main thing that was kind of important to me that if I had been any of those candidates with so many up there, I would have literally been furious at CNN because I really think that they really didn't do good by all the candidates there. It was kind of like a debate for Trump, by Trump, to Trump type of thing. Donald Trump was on split screen just about every single shot. Even when candidates were being asked about whatever it was, Donald Trump, they always managed to put Donald Trump's picture up there some kind of way. Then it was 3 hours long, and I think that was because CNN found a good way to make more money, anything else. But I thought that most of the candidates, I don't think, got much more than 7, 8, or 9 minutes out of that 3 hours to talk about themselves or what they wanted to do. There was a few that got more time, but I really thought for the most of them in the second part, they really got shortchanged by CNN, very much so that they didn't get much of a chance. And when they did get an opportunity to respond to something, there was always Donald Trump's picture there on the split screen. And I thought that was very unfortunate. I would have been really ticked off if it had been me as a candidate to take away the little time I did have and then have Trump's on the split screen with me as well. I just didn't think that was very fair. I thought it was pretty awful. That was my own impression of it, personally.
Actually, the New York Times today had an article. It was Trump overdose.
It was just that's all you saw. Mm-hmm. And even when he wasn't talking, when somebody else was talking, he was on a split screen. Mm-hmm. You know, so the other candidate didn't even get a chance to get the screen by himself, you know, without Trump being there.
Well, I think unfortunately, you know, I'm still not convinced of the value of having these debates, but certainly when you've got a field of 16 folks, mm-hmm. Like you said, Mary, even giving them a fair opportunity to address important issues, they got 7 to 9 minutes out of 3 hours.
That was just really terrible. I thought a better way, and I'm thinking, if somebody else mentioned this, and I thought a better way to have done was to put all the names in a hat, maybe. And they said we're going to have maybe 4 over a period of time, 2-hour debates where people could get to hear and only maybe have 3 or 4 candidates in each thing where they could say what they wanted and you could get more out of them and what they were going on. I think the first debate, the first part of the debate was better because you got to hear more of what the candidates were thinking. It was kind of like in the old days. I don't have a problem with debates. I think debates are good. You get a chance to see what these, especially if they're off guard. Mm-hmm. And they have to answer off the cuff and can't just sit there and read off speeches. They have to answer spontaneously what people are asking. There can be more, maybe some audience participation, and they have to ask them some questions about what it is like. They have in some, like even in Iowa, where they have, where candidates have to really answer questions because that's the only way you get to really know. You can't find out anything about anybody in 30 seconds.
No, but on the other hand, you know, they rehearse. They may not have a teleprompter, but they rehearse responses to potential questions.
Potential is the underlying word. Potential. They don't always know what's going to come up. What if the thing? What if the potential question isn't asked and something else is?
Well, I mean, they obviously can't cover every subject. I would rather see them, instead of leaving the field open to 18 million different topics, mm-hmm. I would rather see them concentrate, for example, on foreign policy. and ask them to respond directly to those kinds of questions.
Are you meaning like when I mentioned like maybe if they had they got a lot of candidates there. And so, and my suggestion would have been, well, maybe put a certain number, just randomly pick five candidates and this one, five, and this one, five, and another one. And then you're saying, pick a topic for that session of foreign policy or the economy or education or whatever else.
Exactly.
And then and have them respond in that manner.
Yeah, and that way you would get, because believe it or not, I think that how they respond to, for example, foreign policy is going to give you an idea of how they would respond, for example, if they're hawkish about war, for example.
That Carly Fiorella was, she's a real hawk.
You know that on the conservative side of the house, we're dealing with issues like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost... gives you a good idea about where they're positioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not going to go completely left and then right.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a fairly good idea. But I think for the public, I would rather have them stick to give them all, and it would be fair.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, okay, what is your position on foreign policy? You know, Trump keeps saying pretty soon, you know, I'm going to have a policy paper.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. He announced his candidacy 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know except that he's going to make America better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's going to do all these things from day one.
Yeah. But how is an open-ended question.
I know one thing about all of the Republican candidates that were there, every last single one. They seemed to have, it was almost like a monologue that you could just sort of sit down and take their, and when it came to policy, they all hated Barack Obama. They all hated Hillary Clinton. They all hated Obamacare. They were all basically against minimum wage. They all thought that, to a one, although these were not the words they used except for Carly Fiorella. And also, I believe it was one other, I got to sit and think of his name. Oh, yeah, Lindsey Graham. I thought that, you know, America should be marching off to war right now with Iran. And I'm listening, and I didn't hear anything basically different. They all felt that that everything was going well, there was no changes, there was no addressing to anything that may need it done. They were all against doing anything about it, even saying that it was real climate change. You know, and there's a global warming, there's a situation going on. I mean, it's plain as nose on your face.
Mm-hmm.
They were all in denial about that as I'm listening to this. I'm saying, am I going to hear anything basically different from any of these people? And women's issues, essentially, was not mentioned at all.
Well, they did say something I heard this
there
morning
was like
about
13,000
Planned Parenthood.
They're
going to shut down the government over it. But the problem with that is the money goes to Department of Health and Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that allocate the grants.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I think it was Jeb Bush who was saying, well, across the United States, you have to figure, this is a huge country. You know, we have almost 300 million people here. Half that population is female, at least. He says, well, we got 13,000 women's clinics across the United States, huh? And, you know, just give them a little more money, they can take care of all the women's issues in this country. Is he, what? And that was essentially all I heard basically out of that. They gave graphic descriptions, including the only woman there, Carly Ifriola. Okay, I'll never pronounce this woman's name right. Well, anyway, Carly F. I went that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the idea of how, no matter what the reason, that, you know, that women who are having abortion were like next to nothing as nothing could get, more or less. And I'm thinking, you know, people just don't go have abortions. There are a lot of reasons why people have to opt for certain things. Usually it's because you simply cannot afford it. Usually it's because pregnancies are unintended. Because it was a planned pregnancy, you wouldn't have to worry about abortion. or use these things they're not planned, or the very young people who got into something they never was going to and suddenly realized children are expensive and it costs money to raise kids. And never stop to realize what the situation, what the circumstances. And then here, something like Mr. Santora, he felt that even with the life of the mother was at stake. Tough for you.
Yeah, well, he's not a woman, though.
You're right. So that's why I was looking at this, and I said, you know, this is really, I didn't see any particular change. And this is, Bush is just as bad as the rest. It is rock rib. Republicans, rock rib, I guess, down to the last dotted I and crossed T. And I didn't see any difference basically in the policy of any of them.
Well, you know, I unfortunately, you know, I've been a voting rights advocate for a lot of years.
That was something that didn't come up either.
Okay, and we have issues as far as Roe v. Wade is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what's happening on the Republican side of the, and again, I'm a voting rights advocate. I advocate for people to participate in democracy. Mm-hmm. I don't care what party it is,
mm-hmm.
or vote in your own best interest,
mm-hmm.
but participate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, don't get hung up with
mm-hmm.
being a Democrat or Republican or independent.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what they are offering that impacts your life,
mm-hmm.
okay, or people that are close to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you have a vested interest in voting,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what's going on just across the board, Roe v. Wade settled the abortion issue,
mm-hmm.
okay? They're trying to reverse Roe v. Wade.
I told a lot of women thought that you know, once you have, you think you've got a right, it doesn't always happen. You always have to be vigorous in patrolling, in looking out for your interests, because when you think you have won something, you go to sleep, you suddenly realize, oh, what happened?
Well, as much
it's
as
like
I,
the Voting Rights Act.
Well, as much as I hate to quote Thomas Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that he says that I agreed with was, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Is eternal vigilance. That's right. You have to always be on guard.
So here we are. We thought that Roe v. Wade settled that issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Voting Rights Act,
mm-hmm.
we thought 1965,
that's
that
was settled.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 2013, the Supreme Court tore the guts out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I see is on the Republican side of the House is a regression.
Yes.
Okay. And some Democrats as well,
mm-hmm.
but I see a regression that scares me more
mm-hmm.
than all the rhetoric about how somebody physically looks and that nonsense. I'd like to see
Donald Trump was very good at that, and as I said before another program, you know, people that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And if Donald Trump didn't have a lot of money, I don't know who he would get. Because I find him a physically very unattractive man.
I always said, with all his money, you mean he can't find a good barber?
Honestly, he's not only a good barber, he should have found some better, genetic parents. Because his parents didn't do him any good whatsoever. He talked about all his, at one time, I guess he mentioned why that he got all these beautiful women to marry him and whatever. Well, if he didn't have any money, if all he had was a Social Security check, believe you me, he wouldn't have those women.
This is true.
You know,
but like I said, what concerns me most is, and what I think people that I speak with that have been in the voting rights and civil rights
movement
for a while, is that states like Arizona, Texas, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
who are part of that initial suit in terms of reversing some of the provisions of the Voting Rights Act,
mm-hmm.
the day after the Supreme Court recesses in June,
mm-hmm.
the day before they put one foot out the door, They waited to vote on the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And Arizona, Texas, and North Carolina
mm-hmm.
had legislation already in hand
mm-hmm.
to restrict
mm-hmm.
Voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
And under the guise that it was to prevent voter fraud. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's no empirical.
But that was not mentioned when the Republicans at their debate didn't mention anything about Voting Rights Act or anything else.
No, and they and I'll tell you why they can't talk about. They
in
don't
want
to alienate. They don't want to alienate African Americans, and they don't want to alienate Latin Americans.
Well, they already done that pretty well. That's going to really come back to haunt them. I think
they can't talk about voting rights without talking about immigration, mm-hmm. because
well, they talked about immigration. Immigration came up big time.
Well, but personally, mm-hmm. but the road to citizenship. Mm-hmm. involves all the rights mm-hmm. extended under the Constitution, mm-hmm. and one of those is voting, mm-hmm. And that's one of the reason why they're going backwards, mm-hmm. is because the Latino population and the African American population.
Well, you know, the one thing that really gets me when I listen to these people talking about the 14th Amendment. And I would say, you know, people don't often realize what the 14th Amendment actually did. It was the underpinning of African-American citizenship, mm-hmm. because it was primarily directed to make sure that the South couldn't renege or try to re-enslave people. With everyone who was born here was going to be a citizen of the United States. It was meant to protect freed slaves. You know, that's basically what the 14th Amendment was all about. And I'm saying, well, what do they think they're supposed to do? We want to annul the 14th Amendment. And, you know, all of us here, we're supposed to give up our citizenship?
Well,
it had nothing to do with Mexican or anybody else's immigration. It was the 14th Amendment was only enacted. It was it was by a Republican Congress. It was enacted to protect freed slaves.
Actually, the 14th Amendment actually does not make any mention of citizenship. It actually was intended so that the slaves who were born here mm-hmm. and it had granted them equal protection under the law, but it doesn't say that. People assume,
that anyone who was basically born here was going to be a citizen and protected under the
Constitution. Exactly. You know,
and so this was what was protecting them. And that was a big thing for people who were just coming out of slavery, because the South was busily trying to re-enslave mm-hmm. people if they could. Mm-hmm. And that blocked them from doing it.
Well, the thing is that's interesting about the 14th Amendment is that... if they were to round up all the illegal immigrants in this country mm-hmm. whose parents were or grandparents were illegal mm-hmm. or undocumented, mm-hmm. I guess they prefer to call, you know, that's more politically correct, then there aren't enough ships mm-hmm. to take, because, you know, you have a large Italian population, mm-hmm. Irish population, mm-hmm. Eastern Europe mm-hmm. That came over in the 19th century, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are undocumented. Mm-hmm. They're children.
Mm-hmm. And are still coming actually from Ireland.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So people, when they think about it, they think narrowly that it's only going to impact the Mexican Americans. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch of us here mm-hmm. who would be impacted by it.
That's one thing that they did talk about a little bit, and it wasn't very complimentary, and they talked about immigration. It seems like coming out of Alden, as far as policy was going, and as far as rising that people want to think about a lot, this was the only thing they were thinking. They weren't thinking about anything substantive. It was just like, down with immigration, down with minimum wage, down with abortion rights, the church is against same-sex marriage. This was basically the things that they talked about. And it was, you know, I was trying to find what else these people going to address? What else they're taking? But if from a Republican point of view, if I was a rock rib Republican sitting there, I would have said, oh, wow, this is just the greatest thing. You know, Carly is great, and Donald Trump is great. You know, those have been my guys here, you know, listening to them. But that was about it. If you've heard it one time, you've heard it all year long. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I don't know if Hillary Clinton must be the most hated woman in the world, as far as Republicans are concerned.
Well, she's an easy target. Right now, she's the only, other than Bernie, she's the only target. So,
you know, but it was just amazing listening to them. And some of them were downright frightening. Carly was really, to me, frightening. Mm-hmm. I've never seen such a hawk in my life. This woman is ready to go to war. You know, well, she's not going to go, but she's ready to send everybody else to war. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening, I said, my God, you know, it's just amazing. They haven't learned anything from Iraq. They have learned nothing.
Well, you know what? I think that, that's why I said, as far as the debates are concerned, I think that there's the normal amount of rhetoric and that you get from the candidates, and they're going to play to a specific audience. It's just like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, they play the Republican primary voters.
His, to me anyways, he seems to be appealing his or structuring his campaign on fear and I don't see that as sustainable, because you know the most pessimistic person is going to look for some glimmer of hope. And as far as Trump is concerned, it's like, let's tear it all down and start all over again. It's sad to me that you had 17 or 16 now Republican candidates, two on the Democratic side, and maybe Biden. Mm-hmm. That in this country, the greatest country in the world, and this is all we've got to choose from.
Well, it's kind of tough. There were some few differences that were brought out among these candidates, but for the most part, it was basically all the same. I think here, and I'm just looking at an analysis printout here, and I could agree with some of this. Among the differences of some of the candidates on issues of including the minimum wage, Ben Carson, although I thought that he was kind of bland, but he seemed to be open to it. But if, when you listen to him, he is just as conservative as all the rest, really, as he mentioned what he would do, what he was for and what he wasn't, he had a little bit of difference as far as the minimum wage, when he thought that, well, you know, you could give people a little more money. It's about as much as he was going to say. Rand Paul was more out and out on his war on drugs, but he felt that he did say he thought it had gone too far, that it was just leading to other different things. It was really going after people who could ill afford it, mainly minority people who weren't working, young people, who were basically the ones that are filling up the jails. And that was him. And also that they're talking about, and these Republicans, most down to all of them except one or two, the more establishment ones, we're talking about shutting down the government. Well, I'm thinking, so these people know what they're talking about. You're talking about air traffic controllers. You're talking about, what about people looking for their Social Security check, you know, with the post office? You know, all these services that the government provides, and no, you either no money to Planned Parenthood or nobody gets anything. So you tried that once before, and where did it get
Ted
you?
Ted Cruz, actually. With Ted Cruz. And look where it got us.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think, like I said, I look at the field of candidates, and it's just personally, I've dismissed Donald Trump, because I think he's that base he's got. Mm-hmm. I think that's about what he's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the people that follow him, I don't see them. Though, from what the pollsters say, anyways, the people that follow him aren't the same people that go to the ballot box.
Well, no, who are we talking about now in their polling now? These are Republican primary voters, a whole different, they're very hawkish, mm-hmm. very conservative, and very white, mm-hmm. and much older. Mm-hmm. And that's who Republican primary voters are. And that's who they're appealing to, all of them right now. A general election is going to be something totally different. You've got a much bigger pool, and all of them don't believe that, and all people don't believe that same way. But this was basically who they're talking to right now. Well, but it's kind of frightening when you think how stuck they are And these same old policies.
And you notice that education
didn't come up either.
Didn't come up. Mm-mm. And as far as African Americans concerned, or people of color,
that didn't come up either.
That is a major issue. Mm-hmm. And again, we're it's another issue where you see policies going backwards. Mm-hmm. In fact, from an African American perspective, and urban school districts, they're more segregated now than they were in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Again, this regression, mm-hmm. healthcare, education, voting rights, mm-hmm. civil rights, human rights. You know, I want to say, you know, been there, done that. Mm-hmm. didn't we solve that like 50 years ago? Yeah. Why would you want to? But the climate is right. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are feeling disenfranchised, mm-hmm. and put upon. There's a lot of people that are anti-immigration, period, because they you know, which is a country of immigrants, but they feel like that the country is being overtaken.
Yeah, by the immigrant population. One other thing that came up I thought was really interesting in the exchange between Carly and Filarillo, Carly F., I was saying, and also Donald Trump. And he went after her on her record at Hewlett Packard. And apparently she had, she'd been accused of being a pretty lousy CEO, had run the company in the ground, he said, and was fired. It was a bad deal where she got fired. She fought back and simply said that it was mainly people, basically, who were her enemies and who were, I guess, Bush supporters and some others that caused her all that trouble. But I thought that was kind of interesting because she also mentioned the fact she was not for a minimum wage. She thought that was not going to, you know, do the country any good whatsoever. Mm. That was her position on that. So I thought that was kind of, that was one of the major, I thought, points that came up when the two of them were going back and forth at it.
Well, I heard her today say that the I don't know if it was the chairman of the board or whoever was in on the decision to terminate her from, mm-hmm. HP, has subsequently written an editorial or article or something saying that he made a mistake, mm-hmm. and that he thinks that you would make a great president. That I heard that today.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you and I talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of them that scare me no end to think that they've got their finger on the button.
On the button, yeah.
You know, I it just shudder to you know, to think that some of these, somebody with the personality, mm-hmm. and the ego. Oh, can you imagine Trump and Putin in a room?
I was pretty amazed at Trump. I listened to Trump, this seemed pretty good. Trump is a, you know, what really gets me is that most of these Republican primary voters, as I said, older, white, working class, a lot of them, Trump has no other experience. He's a good businessman. You know what they say? Well, and not even that. No, he inherited a lot of money. His father had started out the business and made a lot of money. And Trump, you know, was just born to the right parents and sort of walked into the business that he was in. But that someone brought up, too, when they were talking to him, I think it was Carly F., who said about how he had four bankruptcies. Mm-hmm. And when he went back, with his casinos went belly up, I think it was something like 13,000 or 14,000 people lost their jobs. It was a large number of people that lost their jobs. Well, Trump disputed that vigorously and said it wasn't so. Blah, 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 blah. He had his thing. But to me, it just went to show that why would you vote for somebody, first of all, who didn't seem to care much about all these people who lost their jobs, who were just, it was kind of like, what do they call them? I'm talking about robber barons. There's a name for these people that buy up businesses, milk the businesses dry, and then dump them.
That's about right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name. The name, I know that was from years ago, yeah. But I'm just trying to think of what the heck, there's a certain name that they were calling. For the life of me right now, it escapes me. But I'm listening to them, and I'm said to myself, if you're listening to these people, it just would be enough to think, this is all we can do. I'm listening to these people. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when you listen to them and what they basically think. As I said before, there's not, but there's really, there's no daylight really between them when it comes to a lot of policies.
Well, you know, I think it's like Trump's comment, and this was attributed to him, and I don't know if mm-hmm. he actually said it or not, because my source is the same as everybody else's, mm-hmm. and that is, you know, the visual media or print. That when he was asked about his bankruptcies, he didn't see any problem with taking advantage of
bankruptcy laws.
The laws,
mm-hmm. No, not a bit.
And that major corporations often file bankruptcy, mm-hmm. Chapter 11, so that they can restructure.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. it's acceptable business practice mm-hmm. for somebody like that, but an individual citizen that files bankruptcy has their credit ruined mm-hmm. almost for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it stays with them. But again, you know, that highlights even more the privilege of wealth mm-hmm. and the difference between the haves and the have-nots.
And the have-nots. That is so true, John.
And so, you know, he's looking at it like,
hey, business is business.
Business as usual.
Business is business.
So what? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Look at my bank account now. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, how many billions of dollars?
X money,
Okay. But again, you know, like I said, unfortunately, CNN is looking for ratings.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think they did those other candidates too well. Folks, for you just joining us now, and I have to Joan introduce herself. And my guest is Joan Simmons. And she is with me today, and we're talking about the second Republican debate and our impressions of it and what we thought came out of it. But I'm going to let Joan sort of introduce herself. She is the founder of an active group. She is very active herself in not only education policies, but in community action organizations. And so, Joan, tell us a little bit about you again. Refresh our memory.
I've been involved with human rights, and which includes civil rights and voting rights, mm-hmm. for a long time. And a year ago, I formed a nonprofit, mm-hmm. Which is a Niagara Frontier Movement for the advocacy of African American human rights. Mm-hmm. And I did that in response to the regression that you and I were talking about, mm-hmm. in terms of us going backwards, mm-hmm. and in terms of hard fought for concessions. Mm-hmm. They weren't perfect in the first place, mm-hmm. but we had made some inroads.
Some inroads, yeah.
Okay. So in response to that, and using the law to make sure that institutions, individuals, or corporations, or organizations adhere to the law. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't enforce them, then they're meaningless.
Right.
Okay. So rather that Civil Rights Act or Voting Rights Act or whatever mm-hmm. if we don't make sure that they're enforced, mm-hmm. then they become meaningless. So, at any rate, I one of my main initiatives right now, other than voting rights, is equality and education opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that goes to making sure that right now, across the United States, urban schools are all suffering from the same terminal conditions, mm-hmm. where their funding is inequitable. And I think if as African American parents, if I were going to get if anything was going to drive me to the polls, what's happening in our education system would do it.
Well, in Buffalo recently, we just got a new superintendent. I've heard some nice things about him. Barbara Sills-Nevergold was on the show with me a day or so ago. And she was talking about him. He said she had high hopes, although he was always also facing his pinpricks by Mr. Palladino. And she said to Mr. Palladino, probably is going to get a bit surprised. He's busy. He said, you know, no one person can run the school board. You know, it's a committee, more or less, a lot of people there. And when he tells people, well, more or less, it's my way or the highway, he has no way to enforce that rule. And she was quite complex. I'm saying, I was wondering myself, basically, is it simply because he has been dealing with women that he feels he can talk to anybody any kind of way? But Barbara Nerigo seemed to think that he is just simply a bully and thinks that he will try anybody if he thinks he can get away with it.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I've been in meetings, and was just in one on Saturday, mm-hmm. where he spoke. Mm-hmm. And one thing is for sure, I don't think I get the impression that he's a pushover. Mm-hmm. And
well, he's going to stand and fight. There's no doubt about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and in fact, he called himself a tiger.
Mm-hmm. But we just wonder if he's been dealing with people who are yes men, you know, because he's their boss some kind of way. He controls all the levers. But what happens in the face, even with some of these women who won't be pushed around?
Well, I think I think he's a pretty self-assured. He comes across to me anyway mm-hmm. as a pretty confident mm-hmm. person. And let's face it, you know, the positions that he's held in America, we're still dealing with first.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't have survived without being pretty politically astute. I forecast, okay, mm-hmm. based on, I don't know him. Mm-hmm. I've just listened to him speak several times, but based on some of the personalities on that board, mm-hmm. particularly Mr. Palladino, with his super ego. It's just a matter of time mm-hmm. before, up until now, he's been able to pretty much get away with mm-hmm. Being insulting and reckless.
Insulting people and different other
yeah.
things. Barbara never don't seem to think, though, that Dr. Cash knows his way around. I think that he came from a school district that was three times the size of Buffalo. And she said, you know, this guy kind of knows what he's doing. He's not really going to be a patsy. He, you know, it's going to be something different.
Well, I know, but that in of itself, when you consider how reckless Carl Palladino is,
mm-hmm.
there's bound to be. Because you're right, he impresses me as a very astute, very intelligent man, has a good grasp on what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, you've got somebody who has, for the past
used
2 years...
Used to being able to push people around.
Around. Mm-hmm.
And even in his private business, who works for him? You know, you work for him, he's the boss. He's used to people jumping in when he says
when
jump.
When he says,
all
yeah.
you do is say how high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, just...
He's gotten pushback from those four women. He's found he couldn't run them.
Well, but on the other hand, he's come right out publicly and
all the names.
And referred to him
to all kind of different things.
He gave Pamela Brown Dr. Brown, before her ink was even dry on her contract, he was trying to get rid of her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Donald Ogilvy.
That was a big shock to him. You know, Ogilvy was
Gary Orfield.
To be,
I mean,
what his supposed to his hand-picked boy?
Yes.
And he suddenly
yes.
found. And
Samson as well. And
yeah.
And Samson, the president. I made one decision, I guess, where he didn't follow the.
Mm-hmm.
Palladino's
edicts
and where he asked him, not only did he tell him he wanted him to resign, but he had actually picked out who he wanted to replace him,
just as though he had this kind of power that he could do this.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You know, leopards don't change their spots.
Mm-hmm.
So there's bound to be at some point
you know, I wouldn't even say a Clash of the Titans, because that would be giving him far too much intelligence, credit for too much intelligence. But I don't see, I think it's inevitable. And he certainly, in the last couple of meetings that I've been to, board meetings, except last night was a little interesting, he's been pretty, I would say toned down a little bit.
I couldn't get over the fact that, you know, not only, well, he's a Republican too, but I'm not only thinking, we talked about it a bit earlier, and said that education didn't even come up in these Republican debates. And that's not something we're talking about, we just got to talk about, it's a local thing. But when you think that nationally, that a lot of ways, they think exactly like Palladino. You know, when it comes to education and other different things, that it's like you want a minimum wage, you want this, you want that. But that education and a lot of other very pressing problems in this country didn't even come up.
No, and that, and
oh,
and
the glorification of George W. Bush came up quite a bit. You know, Bush was a great savior. Bush, and somebody mentioned even about Dick Cheney. I said, who in the world would want this man back? He caused all this misery in now.
So like I said, if for African Americans particularly, you know, the decay and deterioration of urban school districts across the country has been going on for 30, 40 years. If anything would drive as a parent to the polls, it would be that, because they are doing this, they're trying to do the same thing. And the reason they haven't responded to it, in my opinion, the reason they haven't responded to it, and I'm talking about the power of the bee, because their children don't go to urban schools. Okay. And, the people that are in the inner cities that maybe don't have the financial resources to send their children to private schools are stuck with what they get. It's only been up in maybe the last I'm thinking the last 10 years
where fighting back a bit,
where they're trying to privatize
public schools and have the public pay for private schools.
Exactly. And so there's money, just like they did with the prisons. I mean, you know, now, because there's money to be made, they want charter schools, they want private schools, and that's the only interest that they have. Other than, and I talked to my nephew, is a director of a private, of a nonprofit in Pittsburgh. We're talking about gentrification. Well, now a lot of the interest too in the urban areas is because people are moving back into the city. Okay. And they know that, that unless the school system is
revamped and brought up to date,
then they're not going to attract that income base back into the city, and that's the only reason.
And that's that was the one thing, like we just been talking about these last few minutes here, that did not come up one time in this national Republican debate.
I know.
In either section, the kids' table, so to speak, or in the adults' part. It just did not come up.
And that's what I'm. That's why I'm saying you can.
Poverty was another thing that didn't come up.
Exactly, but you can just about figure out by what they didn't discuss what their positions are. So, you know, why wasn't education at the top of the list?
Or poverty, for that matter.
Or poverty.
Or unemployment, or different other things that could come. I'm just amazed because it's been in the paper locally. I'm sure if it's happening locally here in Buffalo, if you have other places, that, you know, child poverty, children living in poverty, is really, for this country, a disgrace.
Yes.
It's a disgrace.
Yeah.
And I said, my God. But again, I'm saying at that debate, I didn't hear any of these things that we were just mentioning come up.
No, because, well, you know, what they'll do is
come after January, when they whittle the numbers down, and they understand that they're going to need the African American vote, then they start dealing.
The establishment already knows that.
Well, but the thing is, you know, they've already, and I've heard people say this when they talk about Hillary Clinton, that the discussion in terms of the African American vote has been, who is going to be able to, she's got an inroads into the African American community.
Right.
Who's, and with President Obama obviously dropping, not, you know, who is going to capture his base? Excuse me.
I don't think it'd be Ben Carson. I really don't see Ben Carson.
No.
I had one of my nephews talking about it. He said, oh, Ben Carson would be able to walk in there, because he was saying that black people are so monolithic. Basically, my nephew was saying, he said, all they'll see basically is a black face. If he talks kind of slick, like he's got half a brain, or that he sort of does just something to just pack up all black people and put them in jail someplace, that black people probably vote for him. It'd be kind of like a surrounding the wagon thing. I said, I don't really think honey. I listened to Mr. Carson when he did speak, when he was asked, and he got to say anything. I saw nothing in his descriptions of the things that he thought were important, that were important to me, that would have wanted me to vote for him. Look, I really didn't see or hear that.
The fact that he's running second behind Donald Trump ought to tell you something. Okay.
Well, at least I guess you might say I'm not running third or fourth, because after you leave those two, the gap between the top two, Trump and Mr. Carson, widens out like you wouldn't believe.
Well, he's probably the only candidate that I've watched speak without moving his lips. Maybe he is cerebral, but
I think that he's soft spoken. Well, and I think that people mistake a demeanor as a person who might not have other intentions you may not like. They'll say that, well, he's an evangelist, not an evangelist, but he is one of the people who are quite religious in certain circles, you know, the evangelical circles, that he's quite well known and quite liked. That doesn't necessarily equate to somebody who has good policies. You know, you might be good on Sunday singing a hymn and praising the Lord. You may not be so hot on Monday when other issues come to fore.
But that's why
I didn't get that from Ben Carson. I didn't see that much difference between Ben Carson and Donald Trump. I really didn't.
No. Or any of them, for that matter. The really scary ones. Some time ago, I was thinking that the ideal candidate for president would be somebody that has the charisma of John Kennedy, the chutzpah of Christie, the charm of Bill Clinton, and the intelligence of Barack Obama, and married to a Mexican American with a Spanish surname. I don't see in that whole field of folks. Cruz scares me.
Oh, he was something else.
Yeah, he's scary.
Christie wanted to come off like he would in New Jersey. Like, you know, I'm a tough Italian from out in New Jersey, you know, and if you don't watch out, y'all, make sure that you're wearing seaman boots or something like that. I thought, this is really passe. We're kind of passe. I didn't see where he was. This is really bad. I didn't see any difference between Christie, Donald Trump, Ben Carson, who was simply softer spoken, but whose ideas and policy were the same. He was just softer spoken. I don't know if that's how that's going to play out. They think that it won't play out really good. But as I said before, Ben Carson may not have a big national reputation, but in evangelical circles, he's quite well known.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Quite well known.
He's got, 20-some-odd percent?
Yeah. He's quite well known.
Of the vote. And again, for people, You know, ignorance is bliss as far as politics is concerned, but it's also deadly. Mm-hmm. So, I would, if I have anything at all to say to mm-hmm. people, and that is to especially African Americans mm-hmm. and people of color, you have to get engaged because our very lives mm-hmm. depend on it.
Well, Joan, you're a smart woman and you got good instincts. I'd like to ask you some of your opinions because I listen to these people and I'm pretty lefty. And I'm saying to myself, you may have different feelings about them. If I mention these names to you, and you had to describe some of these people in one word, what would you say might be very different than me? We talked about all of them a little bit. We touched on just about mm-hmm. most of them. Mm-hmm. If I say to you, what comes up to your mind if I say Ben Carson?
I don't see him as being an issue. I don't see him.
Are you saying bland?
Yeah, I don't.
But not effective.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think he has enough history or press to make him a viable any viable competition. I just don't. Like I said, he's probably the only candidate that I've listened to that speaks without moving his lips.
Mm-hmm. What about Donald Trump? When you think about Donald Trump, what's your first reaction?
Clown.
What do you think of? And basically, because of the way he's doing something. He's not spending a dime as far as these commercials and things go. He's smart enough to do that.
He's got
free TV all over the place.
Well, you know what I resent about him is the fact that, I've always believed in the dignity. Mm-hmm. Of the presidential office.
The dignity of the office.
And I resent the fact that he is somehow turning this into, you're talking about the most powerful person mm-hmm. in the free world, mm-hmm. and he's turning it into a circus. And I resent that, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. I remember when...
Is he any better or worse? If some of his policies, Trump's policies, in some respects, are a tad better than Bush's.
Well, but Bush is a pretty meek person. I know that Trump has his own adjective, but, mm-hmm. Trump coming out and saying, he's going to put this 50-foot fence... on the border of Texas, mm-hmm. and the comeback is, and somebody will build a 51-foot ladder. So I mean, come on,
but I think the big thing about it is Mexico is going to pay for this.
Yeah, right. Okay. The man again. He's been in the race for 3 months now. He hasn't laid out a single policy. Mm-mm. Concrete policy. He's insulted practically everybody.
But it doesn't seem to bother these primary Republican voters. And that includes women. And most people look at women and say, oh, he's going to insult women, just as though women are a monolithic block. There are rich women, there are poor women, there are black women, there are white women, there are single heads of household women, there are married women. And they all may have something different. There are women who are terrible racists. There are other women who are strong civil rights advocates. And apparently a lot of women in the Republican primary class, voter class, like Trump quite well. He's doing quite well among these women.
Well, like you said, it when people tend to stereotype and put people in classes and groups, mm-hmm. I don't think we've had, for example, a two-party system since they signed the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Okay? There are shades of Republicans. Mm-hmm. There are some that I agree with. Mm-hmm. There are shades of Democrats. Mm-hmm. And there are Democrats that I don't agree with.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I advocate for people and voting rights, mm-hmm. that people become informed mm-hmm. that they vote in their own best interest.
A lot of people don't. People don't vote their own best interest.
Okay. It's just like the Democrats taking, the liberal Democrats taking the African-American vote for granted. Mm-hmm. And they come in, they flood our communities during a major election, make all these promises, mm-hmm. they leave, mm-hmm. they get elected, mm-hmm. and they accomplish absolutely nothing. And we don't hold them accountable.
Well, we should do that. But you have Democratic policies are certainly a tad more beneficial to African Americans and other minority people than other Republican policy. I don't think that, say, for instance, Democrats, the policy, I'm talking about the policies, are certainly not advocating basically a silent word for saying that it's perfectly all right for cops to murder you. You know, so sometimes I think I would rather take my chances with Democratic policies as an African American woman than I would with Republican policies.
Well, there's some that I agree with, and I think a lot.
And just overall policy. You won't, for instance, you will not see Biden or Obama, for that matter, even Hillary Clinton, probably going so far to say, "Oh no, lynching is fine."
No, but I don't think that you'll find anybody mm-hmm. that's going to come right out and say it.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, again, there are, you know, remember Abraham Lincoln was a Republican.
Yes.
So
and that was one reason why Black people stayed Republicans way into the 40s.
Right. But there are.
But the Republican Party of Lincoln's day, because the Republican Party was the one that brought about the 14th Amendment.
Right. But again, just like.
And also Reconstruction.
When people talk about Democrats and they talk about Republicans, they talk about them as a group. If there was anything that demonstrated the differences, it's what you saw last night. Mm-hmm. There are varying shades of, you know, they want to say that they're conservative, left, right.
Well, there are some, yeah. Hillary Clinton is extraordinarily hawkish, mm-hmm. you know, and she makes me nervous. I don't see, when it comes to Israel in the war, just like I'm looking at Carly F., and I'm saying to her, what makes you think, now I think Iran probably has maybe 80 or 85 million people. It's, you know, that's a lot of people, not 300 million like we have here, but that's a lot of people, that they are going to kowtow and be safe for more or less. What she was saying more or less was that the Iranians shouldn't mind being more or less like a colony of Israel. Israel got about, what, maybe 4 million people. There's no way that they're going to rule 80 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm listening to these people, and I don't see a tad bit of difference between Hillary Clinton and Carly F. I just want to keep mispronouncing this woman's name. When it comes to Iran and Israel, there's not enough light between them where you couldn't get a bolt of lightning between them.
That's why I say, you know, drop the fact that they call themselves a Republican or Democrat and look at their policies, because
I got to look at our time here. I want to give you a chance basically to tell us something about yourself, what you're doing now before we have to sign off.
I'm in the process now working on a video mm-hmm. Called Talk Back Buffalo, 10 to 15 year olds, and basically to counteract a lot of the negativism that our children are confronted with and give them an opportunity to talk about and demonstrate their skills, how they feel about the world that they live in.
Tell us the name of your organization again.
It's the Niagara Frontier Movement for the Advocacy of African American Human Rights.
And you have a phone number for that organization?
716-289-1234.
That's an easy number to remember. And our time is up. And just want to thank Joan for coming down and talking with me this morning.
Well, thank you for
about,
having me.
And I'm going to have her back again. She's a very bright woman and very intelligent and works very, very hard in her causes. I'm your host, Mary Davis. Stay with this station throughout your day.
You've been listening to The Mary Davis Show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Mary Davis, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.